Raised Sports is a proud member of the Storyhanger Podcast Network. For more information, go to storyhanger.com. Before we get started, I'd like to announce that Raised Sports has a new and improved newsletter. Now, in addition to the reminder when a new episode drops, we'll also include extra stories from each episode that, for whatever reason, didn't quite make the podcast. Consider it kind of like a director's cut. For example, in the Episode 6 newsletter, Cole shares his thoughts on how Major League Baseball uses the minor leagues to experiment, such as what they're doing with extra innings this season, where the offense starts off with a runner on second base. Cole has some interesting thoughts on the matter, but it didn't quite fit into the flow of the show. But if you subscribe to the newsletter, you'd be able to find out what he thinks about it. So sign up for more cool stories like that from the podcast at raisedsports.com/subscribe. Thank you so much. Now on with the show.
It's not going to be easy when you're facing me. I'm not just going to, lay down and lay balls in there for you to hit. I'm going to try to strike you out and embarrass you.
Every young baseball player dreams of taking the field in the major leagues, but even the best find out quickly that it takes more than dreaming to get there. It takes talent, hard work, and even a little bit of luck.
There's times where I've, kind of had things planned in my head and like expected them to go a certain way, and they normally don't.
Welcome to Season 2 of the Raised Sports Podcast, in which we'll go deep into the minor leagues and follow a prospect as he works towards what he hopes will be a shot at the big leagues.
The organization's going to test me, and if I can hold up, then great. If not, then they'll find somebody else, and that's kind of the nature of the business.
He'll endure long bus trips and short paychecks. He'll tinker with his game as the competition gets tougher, and he'll battle through the aches and pains that come with a long season.
It's just part of the game. I mean, playing a little bit banged up, I mean, you're never going to feel 100%, in a 140-game season.
And along the way, he'll constantly look for any edge to improve his game, to impress, to find a way to advance up the minor league ladder.
When I'm my best is when I'm not thinking too much and I'm just out there to embarrass the hitter. For the rest of my career, just out to show the world.
And a swing and a miss, strike three. Pumps the fastball past Benson up in the zone.
Episode 7, I'm not going to just lay down. Baseball is often referred to as America's pastime, but that title could just as easily be applied to another activity, the card game of poker. Like baseball, poker might have its roots in games from other countries, but poker as we know it today is generally considered an American invention, dating back to the early 19th century. And over the years, it's become stamped into the fabric of American culture, in music, in literature, and especially in films, dramatized as sort of a proxy battle between good and evil, from the saloons of the Old West to the underground clubs of New York City.
Listen, here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
That's a pretty dramatic line from Matt Damon in the 1998 movie, Rounders. Now watch, next time you're sitting at your friendly home game, you'll be looking around to make sure you're not the sucker. But while poker is a game that lends itself to being romanticized in this way, it's really, to those who are truly devoted to it, a job. That's the way it is for Cole Uvula.
The amount of money that I've made in poker is, as of the last time I played, I think it's like right around like it's 89,000 since like in the last like 2.5 years playing, like partially it was playing full time. I guess it'd be closer to 3.5 years now.
I'm sorry. Come again?
I was playing full time, which is when I made a bulk of that money, when I was rehabbing my elbow. I made about like 60,000 when I was rehabbing my elbow, which allowed me to, live on my own, pay my own bills, travel if I wanted to, eat what I wanted to eat, and then obviously anything I needed to spend to help my baseball career. And then in like the end of 2018, 2019, once I, because I really couldn't play much when I was at school, and then I really couldn't play much in my first, professional season. So this in this off season, I, you know, had a really good end of the off season, like January, February. And yeah, it's creeping almost to like $100,000 in career earnings, I guess.
Yes, as you can see, Cole takes poker seriously. In fact, to this point, playing cards has actually been more lucrative for him than minor league baseball. Remember that as a 40th round draft pick, Cole signed for just $1,000, which amounted to a little more than $700 after taxes. And he makes only about $1,300 a month on his minor league salary. And even that is only during the season itself. This part of it is not terribly unusual. Unless a minor league baseball player gets a big signing bonus, he's probably going to have another job to make ends meet. The unusual part is when it comes to Cole, that other job is poker.
Just kind of caught on there and like found like a love for that and a passion for that that I would kind of say is equal to baseball. I mean, it's something I put now, you know, thousands of hours into.
Back to Binion's Horseshoe Casino, continuing this heads-up battle for the World Championship of Texas Hold'em Poker. Chris Moneymaker with a commanding chip lead right now on Sam Farhaw.
2003 was a big year for poker, and while Cole was just 9 years old and didn't know this at the time, the events that occurred paved the way for him down the line. Because 2003, you see, that was the year that poker went mainstream.
With a full house, Chris Moneymaker eliminates Sam Farhaw, and the 27-year-old has stepped out of the virtual poker room, and in a very swift and unlikely manner is atop the poker world.
Chris Moneymaker, an accountant from Tennessee who also happened to have the most perfect name for his big moment, won the World Series of Poker in 2003, earning a $2.5 million grand prize. Before Moneymaker's triumph, there were a series of things helping the game grow in popularity. First of all, there was this invention called the hole cam, a little device that allowed television viewers to see what cards the players had, making the broadcasts much more interesting and popular. Secondly, the rise of online poker was making the game much more accessible to the masses. You no longer had to brave the sharks at the casinos to play. And then along came Moneymaker, a regular guy, an outsider, you could say, and he didn't even have to pay the massive $10,000 entry fee to compete in the World Series main event. Instead, he earned a seat by winning an $86 online tournament. Then he turned that $86 into $2.5 million. Suddenly, everyone thought they could be the next Moneymaker. Since he was so young, Cole wasn't necessarily directly influenced by the Moneymaker boom. He was more into youth sports at the time, but he would soon gain an interest in cards. First, he got hooked on Magic: The Gathering. Then in high school, he started to add poker to his resume.
I mean, I always kind of had an interest in it as like a kid. Just kind of saw it on TV. And gosh, I really honestly don't know how it originally started, but we just started when I was probably like 14 or 15. We would just have like 9 or 10 guys come over and play in my garage. We'd do it probably like once every 2 or 3 months. It wasn't something we did all that often. And we would just play, and we had no idea what we were doing. And that was kind of like, you know, the root of it. And then I stumbled upon this book about some Magic players that got into poker. And there's like a direct correlation. Like a lot of Magic players play poker. There's a famous poker player, Magic player, Eric Freilich, who said, you know, I think he said, I play Magic for fun. I play poker for money. And it's kind of, there's just a lot of similarities.
Cole got deeper into the game later in college at Georgia State University. There was a place there in Atlanta that would basically have free poker. They get you in the door, you buy some food. If you spend $20, you get extra chips. Then if you win, they give you a little bit of money. It was a good low-risk way to learn some nuances of the game.
I just kind of fell in love with it. I started going like 4 or 5 nights a week. and having a little bit of success. It was just free poker essentially. Like if 40 people would show up and it was just a tournament, and you know, if you won, I think they gave you like $100 or something.
But it was a little bit later when Cole started going places in the game, and it's really a pretty remarkable story. He was home for the summer after his junior year at Georgia State, and at this point he was soaking up as much poker content as he could. He was reading books, scouring online forums, he even subscribed to a coaching website. He was, to borrow the poker term, all in. Then something amazing happened, and he embarked on a run that hooked him on the game for good. All it took was a little bit of money and a little bit of luck.
Right before I moved home, I did some yard work for my dad's buddy, and I made about $100 doing that. I took $100 to a casino and played 4/8 limits, which is like about the lowest stakes you can find in a live casino, and turned that into like $700 in a day. Mostly just on pure luck.
A quick aside here. Limit hold'em means there are limits on the bets you can make. So in 4/8 limit, for example, the most you can bet or raise is $8. In no limit, you can bet or raise as much as you want at any time. So it's a little bit riskier because all of your chips can be at stake at any moment. Now back to Cole.
That's laughable now to look back and think of like the skill I had at poker in 2015. It's mostly luck. I turned it to 700, and then I drove down the road to about 30 minutes to a bigger casino, bought it for 500 in a 3/5 like no limit game, and I think cashed out at like 1900 the same day. So my net worth like 19x in one day, and then kind of never looked back. I just took that 1900 and just started playing as much as I could. But then I eventually had to go back to Atlanta. And I went back to Atlanta, went back to school, played in some Atlanta home games over the next few months as often as I could. And then, you know, variance kind of caught up to me, didn't really have much success. Had to just hang it up for a while, mostly just because I was starting to, my poker bankroll was starting to dwindle. And then... I mean, I don't know. I can talk about this forever. I mean, it's a long story, but that's how I got into it.
Poker is, in many ways, a lot like baseball, so it's not surprising Cole would take to both. As a pitcher, he thrives on that one-on-one battle, him against the hitter. Someone's going to win that battle, and someone's going to lose. And Cole loves the idea of letting the batter know that he lost.
I've just had a bigger competitive edge when I've pitched. And it's kind of just based around the fact that, I guess, you know, you're setting the tone, you're attacking, and you're trying to embarrass the hitter. And that's kind of like the fundamental concept that I base my pitching around. Is like, it's not going to be easy when you're facing me. I'm not just going to, you know, lay down and lay balls in there for you to hit. I'm going to try to strike you out and embarrass you. So I guess that started a long, long time ago.
Poker is similar in that in the end, it ends up being one-on-one, each player trying to outsmart, to intimidate, to deceive. One ends up the winner, one the loser. But Cole sees poker as a little more nuanced, a little more of a back and forth. It's a little more about finding those tiny advantages that add up over the long haul.
In baseball, you're really trying to fool people and mix pitches and in and out and up and down, you know, or just overpower them. And in poker, it's more of like a dance, you know, like it's important. Like where the edge comes in poker is if, say, one guy in the exact same spot I'm in, he makes $100, but I find a way to make $150. That's why I have an edge over him. Or if the same spot is reversed and every time he's in that spot, he loses 150, but I only lose 100. You know, that's where the win rates are created. And I don't really know, can't really think of a way that's true in baseball. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like you're standing on the mound versus a guy, and most pots in poker are played heads up, which is one-on-one. So yeah, there's some similarities for sure.
A bigger similarity between poker and baseball are the swings, the bad breaks, the luck. This is where variance, a term Cole just mentioned a moment ago, comes into play. Variance is a math concept. For our purposes here, we won't get too deep into it. But variance is a way of looking at all of the possible outcomes of a particular play and calculating and understanding the odds of different results occurring. If you understand the variance, you understand that sometimes, even though a certain play should be favorable to you, there's a chance the result will not go your way. This is true in both poker and baseball. Sometimes, pocket kings beats pocket aces. Sometimes, that slow ground ball finds a way to sneak through the infield. This is variance.
People, I think, miss in baseball that people in poker world really understand. It's just the concept of variance. And like, variance in poker is massive. It's kind of, you know, like I said, just the 80%, 20% thing. But variance in baseball is a three-hopper right at a shortstop is an out, and a three-hopper, let's say 10 feet left of the shortstop is a single. And essentially, you're hitting the ball exactly the same, except for maybe like 5 degrees, you know, different on the barrel, and it results in a single, and it results in an out the other time.
In episode 6, we covered an outing Cole had on June 25th against the Carolina Mudcats. Everything went wrong in that game.
First and second, two away, 2-1 pitch to Feliciano. It was rolled to third, it hits third, and carries into left field, a base hit. Hairston around third, he'll come in to score.
There was a full swing bunt for a single, and there was a routine grounder that hit the third base bag and bounced over the third baseman's head for another hit.
And back-to-back, simply lucky hits for the Mudcats.
Cole's understanding of variance, which came from his poker playing, helped him keep his cool after that game.
Variance definitely was not in my favor, and it's something I can just easily live with when, from my poker background, it's no different. It's like, you know, maybe I go to the poker room and I get aces in versus kings, but there's a king on the flop and I lose $1,000 pot because of it. I can go home and just know, like, I got it in good. It just wasn't going my way today. You know, variance wasn't on my side. Same thing as the Carolina outing on I think it was the 25th of June, just 4 earned runs, but never really got hit too hard and just a little bit unlucky and the ball wasn't bouncing my way. It's just variance.
There's another term that kind of connects to variance, and that is recency bias. Recency bias is the tendency to place too much importance on the most recent thing that has happened and let it affect your judgment. So in poker, for instance, when you suffer a bad beat, you might change the way you play. Or in baseball, if you have something unusual happen, you might change how you pitch.
Recency bias is a big thing also, both in baseball and poker. It's like, you know, if you have like a great slider and you strike everybody out with it, and then one day you throw the same strikeout slider pitch and they just hit it out of the park, doesn't mean you have a bad slider.
If you can recognize variance and recency bias, you can avoid falling into those traps. After the 4-run outing on June 25th, Cole didn't change things up. He understood that he'd had good stuff and things just didn't go his way. Sometimes bad things happen, but you keep going. Cole did, and he thrived as he moved through the first half of July. His next 4 outings, he pitched 8 1/3 innings, struck out 10, allowed just 3 hits, and no earned runs. He was back on track.
0-2 to Payne, runner goes. Swinging a bouncing ball to shortstop. DePrada Johnson up with it. Guns it on to first, and the Woodies win. A one-hitter turned out tonight by Wood Ducks pitching. Alex Eubanks and Cole Uvula, sensational on the mound.
We should point out now that this does not mean Cole is shy about making changes. He's not. In fact, his willingness to make adjustments and to do so quickly is a strength. But he doesn't do it out of emotion. He does it in an analytical way. He's done this in baseball. And in cards, he did this while struggling through the worst slump of his poker career. At the time, Cole was playing poker full-time while rehabbing his arm from Tommy John surgery. And he went into a frightening downswing in which he saw his poker bankroll shrink by $7,000 in 2 weeks. It made him question everything and he wondered if maybe he wasn't good enough. So Cole hired a coach. And the coach not only helped him make some key changes to his game, he helped him realize that he actually was a good poker player.
He was the first person to actually get me to admit and get me to understand that I was a professional poker player. He said to me, he's like, well, are you a professional poker player? And I was like, no, you know, it's just something I'm doing right now to kind of pay my bills and get by while I'm rehabbing my elbow. You know, I still have baseball as my main focus. And he's like, do you have any other source of income other than poker? And I said, no. And he said, and you completely support yourself through poker? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, then you're a professional poker player. And he really wanted me to embrace that and be proud of that.
If he was a professional, then he should treat it like his profession, like a job. So Cole did so. He set a playing schedule. He forced himself to keep strict hours. He kept a log of every session so he could look back and analyze how it went to see the results. When Cole started doing this, when he started treating it like a job, just as seriously as he treated baseball, he got out of his slump.
Right after that, you know, I instantly pulled out of the downswing and, you know, had a 30K upswing. So it's, those were some things I definitely have learned.
There are always going to be ups and downs in life, no matter what you do. Little hurdles, often unexpected, that crop up out of nowhere to let you see what you're made of. Sometimes it's a bad beat, but sometimes it's something more. Cole had had a good stretch of games since that June 25th contest at Carolina. He'd been cruising, striking guys out, not giving up any earned runs. But if there was one thing that could be cause for concern, is that his command still wasn't quite where he wanted it. And after a solid run of games around the All-Star break in which he pretty much stopped walking guys, the free passes were kind of starting to creep back in. It was subtle at first, a walk here, a walk there. Then they started to increase. On July 7th at Myrtle Beach, he walked two, though since that was over three innings in what really was a dominant outing, that wasn't a big deal. But then on the 12th against Lynchburg, he walked two more in just 1 1/3 innings. Then came July 15th, and Cole, he lost the strike zone.
The 3-1, and low and outside, ball four. It's a leadoff walk. Here's the pitch, and it's upstairs, ball four. He lost him. A deep breath, now the 3-1, and it's low and in, ball four. 2-1 with two out, 3-0 to Blackman, and that missed up high, ball four.
Cole walked four guys in just one inning of work. And while he only allowed one unearned run, and that run didn't even play a role in the outcome of the game, it was definitely a cause for concern. There were a number of possible factors Cole considered that were causing his command issues. The most likely was that he was experimenting with his delivery in an effort to be quicker to the plate. Cole has a high leg kick, and it makes it easier for base runners to steal on him. It was something his coaches wanted him to work on. But it seemed his tinkering may have been causing some mechanical issues. I spoke with him about it the day after the four-walk game.
Last night was like probably the worst outing I've like had in professional baseball up to this point. I made like a little mechanical adjustment in between outings where I was trying to be quicker to the plate with runners on base so that like I wasn't stolen on. And in doing that, I think I took it a little too far and was being really quick to the plate. I just felt so, like, out of sync. Like, I honestly almost even thought, like, I didn't feel hurt, but it was like, I almost wonder if, like, I am hurt because of how, like, I just could not find the strike zone at all.
Was it as simple as a mechanics issue, or was there something more? When you have an outing like that, it can make you question everything. But just because he had a bad outing didn't mean it was time to panic. It didn't mean he should stop all efforts to shorten his delivery. Maybe he could find a happy medium. After that fourth walk, Cole got a mound visit from his pitching coach, Steve Mintz.
Uvula with his fourth walk in the inning. And now time called, and Steve Mintz, the pitching coach, is coming out for a visit. Uvula in this inning has thrown 28 pitches, 18 balls, 10 strikes.
Mintz asked him if he was okay. Cole replied that he was fine, but he wanted to go back to his regular delivery to get out of the inning. So he did. He went to his normal leg kick, threw three straight fastballs by the batter, inning over.
So it really sucks, but, you know, I'm trying new things, and it's all like learning experience for me, and I'm just trying to kind of mold myself into the best pitcher I can be. And if that means I need to go have some trial and error moments in July in high A to eventually become like the best big league pitcher I can, then so be it. It was a little embarrassing last night, and it sucks, and it's obviously not the result I want, but it's not something I'm like hanging my head about today or even really concerned about. It's just I tried something that I believe and the coaching staff believes is going to benefit me long term, and the result wasn't good. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to abandon it, but I just need to find something maybe in the middle ground that is going to work for me.
The outing was distressing, like taking a bad beat, but it wasn't time to get emotional about it. It was time to take an analytical approach, to figure out why he was suddenly out of sync and how to fix it. It was time to go to the videotape. Thanks for listening to the Raised Sports Podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Bob Harkins. Special thanks as always to Cole Uvilla for letting me follow along with him throughout the 2019 season. Music credits go to Broke for Free and Kevin McLeod, and the theme song comes from DL Sounds. Broadcast game audio courtesy of play-by-play announcer Matt Present, AM 960 The Bull, and the Down East Wood Ducks. Coming up in Episode 8, Cole tries to figure out why he's been issuing so many walks. As he searches for a solution, he does what he often does in this kind of situation. He follows the advice of his late mother, Denise.
That was probably the biggest, you know, lesson I took from her, was just that, you know, to kind of ride the wave and not too high, not too low, and just understand that there's a reason that this is happening.
I'm Bob Harkins, and this is Raised Sports. Thanks for listening.